Katayanti.
They chant.
Ja.
And.
Atapanti.
Inflict suffering.
Vividaha.
Various.
Tapaha.
The material miseries.
Na.
Do not.
Etan.
Unto them.
Matkata,
fixed on me.
Ketasaha,
their thoughts.
Their
so, translation, engaged constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the sadhus do not suffer from material miseries because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There are multifarious miseries in material existence. Those pertaining to the body and the mind, those imposed by other living entities, and those imposed by natural disturbances. But a sadhu is not disturbed by such miserable conditions, because his mind is always filled with Krishna consciousness. And thus he does not like to talk about anything but the activities of the Lord. Maharaj Ambarish did not speak of anything but the pastimes of the Lord. Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanu Varnane, Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 4th chapter, text 18. He engages words only in glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sadhus are always interested in hearing about the activities of the Lord or his devotees. Since they are filled with Krishna consciousness, they are forgetful of the material miseries. Ordinary conditioned souls, being forgetful of the activities of the Lord, are always full of anxieties and material tribulations. On the other hand, since the devotees always engage in the topics of the Lord, they are forgetful of the material miseries. It's a very interesting verse and purport. So, madashraya kata mrishta srimanti kate hanti cha Tapanti vividas tapa noitan madgata chetasaha. So, Om Gana Timidanda Shah, Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yenatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this verse gives us the secret of becoming free from miseries. So, why is it that we're always chanting and hearing in Krishna consciousness and we're still experiencing miseries? Does that mean that this verse is wrong? No. Because we are not actually chanting and hearing the right way. And of course, we understand about the offenses, you know, the 10 offenses to be avoided. That's a negative thing. What not to do. But we don't understand what to do. We understand what not to do, but we don't understand what to do. And what to do is more than just chanting with the lips. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra does not appear simply from chanting with it, you know, moving the lips and the vocal cords and stuff like that. But one has to chant with one's heart. One has to hear with one's heart. And that's a very difficult thing. I mean, hearing with the mind is one thing. You know, fixing the mind on Krishna or hearing with the mind, Sabai Manak Krishna, Padara Vindayaho. But to chant with one's heart is very difficult. So how do you do that? Or to hear with one's heart? First of all, you have to become aware of what's in your heart. We've been talking about this. And that means being aware of the dirt there too, not just the soul. We got a lot of interesting things in our heart. We got the super soul, the soul, and all garbage. I mean, a lot of interesting things. And some nice things, too. You know, some nice things, some bad things, and some mixed things like that. So, most of us are not actually in connection with our heart when we're chanting, when we're praying, when we're doing service. We're in... Basically, we may be even in denial about our desires and thinking, you know, I'm doing this devotional service or I'm thinking this way or that way because I simply want to love Krishna. And then If someone criticizes us, we think, don't they know how sincere and advanced I actually am? Nobody appreciates me. Nobody loves me. Nobody knows really that I'm completely Krishna conscious, except for myself. Even Krishna doesn't know that I'm completely Krishna conscious. Right? I'm the only one. So that's called denial. You know, you're in denial. So therefore, when you're praying to Krishna, chanting, you should also be aware of what's happening in your heart. What does that mean? That means being honest with Krishna, you know, revealing to Krishna what's in your heart. And we've been speaking about that before, like Dhruva Maharaj. He was honest with Krishna. He didn't pray to Krishna, oh, my dear Krishna, I have no more material desires, I'm your eternal servant. No. What did he pray? He said, I want something. And it was from his heart. It was actually from his heart. He really wanted to have a kingdom greater than that of his great-grandfather. So he was chanting very sincerely, more sincerely than any of us have ever chanted, right? You know, super sincere. Because he was in contact with his heart's desire, which, of course, was not a completely pure desire. However, at the same time, he was very devoted to his spiritual master, Narada Muni, and he was completely convinced. He had firm faith. You know, so he had firm faith, devotion to the guru, and revealing his heart. You know, the three different things. Whereas our faith, not so firm. Sometimes we're thinking, you know, what if Krishna consciousness doesn't work? What are my alternatives in life? You know, can I still go to medical school at 62 or 63? Become a doctor? I mean, what else do I have in life? So we don't have firm faith. We don't have firm faith in the guru. You know, that he says something that, Shraddha Shabde Vishasha Kahe Sudrida Nishtaya, then everything will be accomplished if I carry out the order of the spiritual master. So, and we're not revealing our hearts. So we got three strikes against us. Interesting, isn't it? So, first thing is we have to develop that firm faith. Faith that by doing what Krishna wants, then everything is accomplished. Wow, who's that? Is that Nimai now? Oh, yeah. Nimai's too old for that stuff. So firm faith, how do we get firm faith? We associate with those who have faith. Some sound effects in the background. So we associate with those who have faith, and their faith rubs off on us, and then the bhakti becomes implanted in our hearts from those particular great devotees. And so that's how we develop firm faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. And then also, how do we develop the faith in the guru and follow the guru? That requires a little bit more practice. That requires being on the intelligence platform, and even though our mind is saying something, just to do what Krishna and his represent. Like I've mentioned many times before, I ask myself whenever I'm making a decision, even though Prabhupada is not here in this world externally, I ask myself, what would Prabhupada want if he was here? We were talking about remaining faithful in ISKCON the other day. Like, I was asking devotees, why have you stayed in ISKCON? And my answer was that because I know that's what Prabhupada wants. And other devotees had some other answers, like because it's good prasadam. You know, it's the best food in the world. So, I mean, that's all right. And nicest looking deities, that's all right, too. And these are all true statements. But as far as my own priorities are concerned, it's because what Prabhupada wants. So even if I have to be sent somewhere where there's no deities and there's no good prasadam, I just have to eat boiled food like I'm eating now, then I'll still remain in the Hare Krishna movement, even if there's no paneer in my subject. Or subji in the paneer. Right? So basically there has to be that firm faith in the guru. And then as far as opening one's heart, that's really the most difficult one. Really being humble enough to admit where we're at in devotional service. You know, the humility is very hard to come by. Manina, manadena. Not expecting any respect. In other words, not getting disturbed when we don't get respect. And then giving respect to others, even if they don't respect us. That's a hard one. Isn't it? Because we want to develop a lot of enemies in this world and blame others for our own failings. And so, that's really what's required. So, when one fulfills those three prerequisites, you know, firm faith in Krishna, firm faith in following Guru, and also being really honest with Krishna as far as what your heart and your desires are, instead of putting on a false front, then you can really chant with your heart. So then, once you chant with your heart, what you do when you hear about Krishna is you put Krishna in your heart and you visualize what is being described. Because here we're talking about how to become detached from this world. Because in this world, we're visualizing things. I don't, because we have eyes usually. We're visualizing and experiencing things in this world. So to make us detached from this world, we have to have visualization and experience of something else. Not simply a theoretical understanding. Not simply, oh, there's a spiritual world, it's real blissful, you're not the body. The theoretical understanding really doesn't help anyone become detached. You can go to the hospital where a devotee is suffering from some disease and just tell them they're not the body a million times, and they'll just get angry with you. Is that you shouldn't experience pain. You're in Maya. You're not that body. You're the spirit soul. Okay, get out of my room. Right? I mean, it doesn't really help. It's a negation. So you have to have as full an experience of the spiritual realm as you have of the material realm, or actually fuller. It's not simply a philosophical adjustment or a mental adjustment, that you have to have that full experience. So how do you have that full experience when we have designated senses, or as it's said in the Vedic literature, the Takshi Krishna Namadi Namavet Krayam Indriya Seva Mukhehi Jivato Swayameva Sparachita, that our senses right now cannot perceive Krishna. They're upadis, you know, we have designated senses. That means they're covered. So how do you have that full experience? Therefore, you're required to actually visualize these things. That's the beginning. Like we were talking about last night and yesterday, about all the different stages of bhakti. Remember we talked about that last night? We talked about the sadhana stage where you have vaidhi, then raganuga, and then after that you have bhava bhakti, and after that you have prema bhakti, right? Those are the three basic stages. The first one has two divisions, and the other ones have other divisions too, but we don't have time to get into all that. So let's say we're executing vaidhi bhakti, means rules and regulations. And that's part of sadhana. You know, sadhana bhakti means practice. So we should endeavor to come to the point of visualizing Krishna's activities as we're hearing about them. This is very important. Like when one reads, people have lost this ability to a certain extent in the modern day and world age, because we're used to television, right? Television, computers. So we see something and we're not used to using our brains anymore. We just sit like a potato, a couch potato. You know that expression here? Couch potato, and the only exercise we ever get is pushing on the remote. Our thumbs are very strong. The thumb is the strongest part of the body nowadays, because they're pushing, you know, on this remote. And you know, and we watch so many rugby games. Who won last night? New Zealand. Oh, no wonder you're so happy. Everyone's I was wondering, why is everyone smiling? Anyway, everyone got up early, you know, joyful and everything. So, but we watch these things, and we're not really participating. It's just like, we're just being... It's almost like that movie, The Matrix, where they just stick something in your back of your head, and you're just like laying there for your whole life, experiencing things you think are real but are actually not real, eating things you think are real, not real, and having relationships that you think are real, are not real. So that's due to the modern media. It's even worse than Maya used to be. Maya's bad, but now it's even worse. Because now you get an illusion within an illusion, right? Previously, let's say 100, 200 years ago, we were in illusion, all of us, because we were there. You know, this is not our first birth. So we were thinking we're the body, we're thinking we're a particular nationality. Okay, that's nice. But now we project ourselves into this virtual reality utilizing technology. And it's an illusion within illusion. I was reading the other day that businesses, now they're doing meetings, virtual meetings with avatars, right? Yeah, this whole thing on the internet is called Second Life. So businesses are using that. They're having meetings in this virtual country. There's actually 10 million people in this virtual country. And they have money. I think it's called Linden dollars. Is that what it's called? Yeah, Linden dollars. Which they exchange for, you know, normal dollars in this world, which are just an illusion anyway. Actually, all your dollars are an illusion because it's just a piece of paper, you know, they print it on. It's just based upon your trust that it's worth something. So then you get illusory dollars of illusory dollars. And you get illusory bodies of illusory bodies. And you're just like thinking this is life. Even I went into that illusory country once. And I found a Hare Krishna temple. And it is, you know. And I found some of my disciples that were not so good looking, but they were really good looking when they were in that world. Because there they got a chance without having good karma. You know, normally if you want to be good looking and healthy and everything like that, you got to have good karma. But if you go into this illusory world, you can pick your own body, your avatar. Because they're just like strong and, you know, rugby players and everything. So, getting back to the point, so we've lost our ability to a certain extent to visualize things. Originally in India, the people would hear Ram Katha, Krishna Leela at night. You know, no television. And the kids would remember all these things. Like I'm sure remembers listening to Ram Katha. And he remembers the whole Ramayana, very expert. But nowadays, you know, it's just like all we remember is MICKEYMOUSC. Right? Of course, I don't even know what the cartoons are now. That I don't know what you watch. So, because we've lost because of technology, we've lost our ability to visualize things. So when we chant, as long as we fulfill the three prerequisites that I mentioned in the beginning of the class, we should be trying to visualize or see what's happening in Krishna's pastimes. That's practice. That's also part of sadhana practice that enters into the beginning realms of Raghunuga. You know, so we're not on the Raghunuga platform yet. I'm not saying that we should think ourselves a resident of Vrindavan and just think it's not that Dwarka should think I'm a gopi now. And what is my dress look like? You know, what color hair do I have? And then he asks his wife for some earrings or something like that. And that's a little sahaja stuff. But visualize, picture in our minds the pastimes of Krishna as they're going on. And we hear about these pastimes. You know, the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, the pastimes of Krishna, the pastimes of Lord Nrsingadev, the pastimes of all the incarnations. So you basically have like a television, internal television. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said that a pure devotee has the spiritual television and he can tune in on any channel he wants. It's like nowadays people have these satellite TVs and they have like 200 channels. What? How many? How many? More than that?
More than that.
Really? Wow. One time, many years ago, I visited my father and he had this satellite dish that could move to all the satellites. It was one of those real big ones. And it had like a motor on it. So it even more than you have nowadays. He could move to any satellite that's in the sky and he would just like spend all his time, you know, moving the satellite dish around. So, A pure devotee, he can watch any of Krishna's pastimes anytime he wants. He can just close his eyes. Doesn't even have to close his eyes. And you're thinking he's here, but he's actually in Vrindavan, or he's actually in Ayodhya, or Mathura, or Dwarka, enjoying these pastimes with Krishna. So that's really how he gets detached. Of course, we're not on that platform. Therefore, we can begin to visualize in our mind's eye these pastimes as we get. And that's why it's very important. Like Prabhupada established the standard that in the evening, the devotees would read Krishna book to each other. In the old days in ISKCON, we'd be drinking milk. You have a hot milk with bananas in it, banana milk. And sometimes there's cinnamon or cardamom or something in the milk. And all the devotees would be sitting around in a circle and taking turns reading from Krishna book. And then you go to sleep, and of course when you're sleeping, you're going to dream about Krishna or think about Krishna. Nowadays, you know, before you go to sleep, you check the news. What's the stock market? Who won the rugby game last night? So I'm sure some of you dreamt about rugby last night, right? Isn't it? Yeah, last night was funny. You know, your eye, you know, if I would look at you while you're sleeping, your eyes would be moving back and forth. And, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, your husband or wife will say, why did you get up in the middle of the night and start yelling, get him, get him, get him? Right? So Prabhupada established that we would be thinking of Krishna when we were sleeping. And the interesting thing, psychologically, whatever you're thinking of before you go to sleep, of course, then you think of it at night, but then also it takes over your thoughts the next day. There's something subconscious about that, like the 15 minutes before you go to sleep, whatever you're meditating on, focusing on. I know in the business world, they tell you to focus on making money 15 minutes before you go to sleep. There's actually a whole technique if you want to be successful in business. Then you write down your goals, your business goals, like I'm going to make this much money today, tomorrow, and then focus on them, and you keep a notebook by your bed. You ever heard about this before? This is a standard technique for success in business. If you want to make a lot of money, you can take my advice. So, because otherwise you won't be focused the next day. To be successful materially, you have to be focused. You can't just get out and say, you know, hurry ball, let's sell something today. So, anyway, so Prabhupada established this system where you hear about Krishna and the devotees would be talking about Krishna. Even, of course, we got a little sahaja in the beginning days. Myself and the other brahmacharis, we would look at each other and say, after reading about the coward boys, oh, we must be coward boys in the spiritual world. But that was an innocent type of thing. It wasn't dangerous sahaja. So in other words, your heart and mind is absorbed in Krishna's pastimes because you're visualizing, you're seeing it there, right in your mind's eye. And so that's why it's very important to hear about the pastimes of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, the form of Krishna. Not just the philosophy. What does the philosophy do? I mean, that's also Krishna Katha. But the philosophy helps us strengthen the intelligence, the ability to discriminate. But then, after that, we start to meditate on the pastimes. And all of us should do that. Not that you put yourself in the past, and that comes later on. As we mentioned, in the Raghunuga platform, when you're actually fully on the Raghunuga platform, then you actually become attracted to a particular resident of Vrindavan, and you begin to meditate on the service, doing something, and you put yourself in the pastimes. Right now, don't put yourself in the pastimes. It'd be a disaster. You know, all of a sudden, you know, there's pastime of Radha and Krishna, and also all of a sudden Dwarka shows up in the middle of Rasa dance. It's a disaster. It's like the story in Braj that Narada Muni wanted to see the Rasa dance. And you know, it wasn't appropriate. So he shows up, and guarding the Rasa dance is Lord Shiva, but in his female form. Gopishvara. That's Lord Shiva in the female form. And Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva is the Dikpala, he's the guardian of Krishna's pastimes in the Rasa dance. So Lord Shiva says, you can't enter. We only allow women in here. And Narada Muni thinks, what should I do? And then he's told, you should go bathe in the Kushama Sarovara, and then you become a gopi. So Narada Muni bathed in the Kushima Sarovar, which is a nice pond right by the side of Govardhan. And then he becomes Naradi, the female Narada Muni. And then he's able to enter. So you don't want to enter, like barge into Krishna's pastimes unless you bathe in Kushima Sarovar first, but unless you're actually prepared. So we visualize without entering into the pastimes. But later on, we should keep in mind the goal is that we can actually put ourselves and do internal service for Radha and Krishna. And actually, you could, to some extent, you can do that. You can meditate on cooking for the deities, some service internally. So you meditate on that. But later on, you actually follow in the footsteps of a pure eternal associate of Radha and Krishna, a Ragatmaka devotee, and then you're executing this internal life continually, and therefore what's happening externally is not so important. Whether it's pain or pleasure or who wins or who loses the game, it's not important. Who cares? That's the higher taste. And so that's how you get detached from the material world. Not simply by hearing about the negativity of the material world, although that hearing helps us control the intelligence or function on the intelligence platform. But by having a whole life, you need to have a life that's separate from this external life. Otherwise, you're going to be looking for happiness in this world. Unless you have it has to be a whole life. Like Prabhupada said, we should execute Krishna consciousness in the mood of the gopis in the way that the gopis made believe that they were actually, faithful to their husbands. But at the same time, they were thinking of Krishna, although they had a whole life unbeknownst to their husbands. In other words, we should not arouse suspicion of anybody that, we have a whole life outside of this life. If you tell people that, then you're really puffed up. It doesn't work. That's the interesting thing. If you tell people, well, I have a whole internal life. Guess what happened last night? I was watching the gopis and watching Krishna do this. No, that means you're prideful, and that cuts you off from that internal life. As soon as you start to brag about anything, then it's not good. Because Trinadapi Siddhichena, Taradapi Sahishana. Krishna doesn't let braggarts into the spiritual world. So you have to, this is something private. Something private. The internal life of a devotee is very, very private. Like even Prabhupada, when Prabhupada, sometimes he would go into, once in a while he would go into trance. He was in Atlanta, Georgia, and he saw the deities of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. He started to chant, Padama Karana Bahu Juijanam Nitai Gaura Chanda. The most merciful lords, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And he went into trance. The devotees didn't know what to do. And then he finally started chanting. And Prabhupada, and the devotees asked Prabhupada, what should we do when you go into trance like that? And, Prabhupada didn't say, this is my life, internal life. I go into trance. Prabhupada said, I don't do that very, please excuse me for doing this. Please excuse me for, interfering with the Bhagavatam class or something like that, or the greeting. So a devotee has to be naturally humble. But we should be focused on developing that internal. I think we should record that for an alarm in the morning. I have this nice thing on my iPhone that's just like bells that wakes me up. But this would be more effective. I would jump out of bed. So that's the secret. That is actually the secret in Krishna consciousness, to have this internal thing going on, beginning with meditation on Radha Krishna's pastimes, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, and as I mentioned many times before, we can use modern technology to assist us in this by, listening. We may not have someone to read to us. Just like last night, I was going to sleep, and I just put on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the readings of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it was very peaceful. I made a conscious decision not to look at my computer before I go to sleep. Because first of all, I won't sleep well. because of all the emails coming in, you know, Gurudev, I just got a divorce. I hope it's all right with you. Gurudev, my husband's smoking marijuana. I don't know what to do about it. You know, all these nectarian messages I get. Gurudev, I don't like you anymore. You know, it's a... Or we just, Gurudev, we just got a bill for, you know, so much money. How are we going to get the money to pay for it? Can I borrow it? So therefore, I actually made a conscious decision, because I was doing that before I went to bed, just to check to see if anything needed my attention. I just made a conscious decision. You are not going to do that anymore. Even though the mind is thinking, but, what if there's something important? Just like the mobile phone, it's always ringing, isn't it? And it's, we become like Pavlov's dogs. I don't know if you know what that means. That means that there was a psychologist, who trained his dogs to salivate each time they rang a bell. The mobile phone went off. Anyway, because he would feed them. And then he stopped feeding them, and he kept ringing a bell, and they still salivated. So we become conditioned by these different things we do, you know, whether it's technology or whether it's our ordinary activities during the day, we're conditioned. Like each time the phone rings, I have to get it. We may be driving the car, it must be maybe the most dangerous thing in the world. And the person's just calling to ask, where are you? When are you coming home? You know, it's basically usually that. But we're conditioned. So we have to sort of like use our intelligence to break through our conditioning. And say, you know, I'm not going to read the emails. I'm not going to answer the phone right. I'm going to turn the phone off at night. You know, if there's an emergency, they'll come and wake me up. I'm not worried about it. It's not that I have to answer the phone. I'm going to hear Krishna Katha before I go to sleep. When I wake up in the morning, I'm going to chant my rounds before I start doing the emails. Especially when I'm staying in a room with my computer. Then it's just like, it attracts you, you know. You know, so I just say, no, be quiet. Shut up. You know? Isn't it? And then you feel much better about yourself after you've done that. You take your time for your sadhana, you take the time to hear and chant about Krishna before you go to sleep, and then it's so nice. Life becomes so nice instead of a bundle of anxieties. All right, so any questions or comments about these things? Yeah.
While you were talking about visualizing things. In the school, we have to also train the students to visualize what they read.
Mm-hmm. That's good training.
Coming now in the education system to visualizing. But I was thinking about Lord Shiva. When he meditates, what does he do, actually?
What does he do? He visualizes Ram's pastimes. He's a Ram Bhakta. Mm-hmm. And Krishna's pastimes, too. But primarily, he's Ram Bhakta. So he's in his mind. He's seen. I mean, that's why when Lord Shiva is smiling sometimes, and his wife asks him, "Why are you smiling?" or laughing, and then he has to explain. You know, Devi, you know, this is why I'm doing it. I'm seeing this, and that's happening.
Maybe it's Lord Shankarshan.
Sankarshan.
Every lila of his, he perceives in his mind.
Yeah, he's actually seen. It's not just some thoughts coming in, you know, well, Krishna's doing this, or Lord Sankarshan, or Balaram is doing this. He actually sees it. It sees it. Like, nowadays, of course, they're coming out with this different type of television called three-dimensional television. You heard of that before? Where you wear glasses, and you can see, devotees took me to this one movie. What was it called? Avatar. Heard of Avatar? It was about the descent of Krishna into this material world, right? The various the Shaktivesh avatars, the Guna avatars, Leela avatars. No. So it was a 3D movie, and you actually see things. So when a devotee perceives this, he sees it like in 3D, 4D, 5D, you know, high D, HD. It's like, let's take the example of Bilva Mangal Thakur. Bilva Mangal Thakur, you all know the story how he blinded himself? And he was in Vrindavan, you know, blind, and then Krishna came and brought him some milk and things like that. But he was actually able to see that he wrote the most beautiful book, the Krishna Karnamrita, which details in elaborate detail Krishna's qualities, Radharani's qualities, and the pastimes of the qualities of the pastimes. A beautiful, small book. It's not a big book. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu loved to read this book, but he was blind. So he was actually visualizing all these things in his heart of hearts and seeing them and giving elaborate descriptions. This is a pure devotee. He's able to do that. Then you have no need of a camera anymore, anything. Isn't that nice to be able to tune in any channel you want? You know, what's on tonight? Oh, the Rasa Leela. Okay. And you just sit there. Watch. And also the devotees' pastime. They can watch Prabhupada's pastimes or pure devotees' pastimes. That's so nice. Isn't it? I mean, it makes life so nice. Wherever you are, even if you're in the hospital, even if you're sick, even if the body's just completely falling apart, you have a whole life there. That's the real life. This is not real life here. This is just the illusory life. All these things you're thinking is so important. My home, family, all these things. It's like will-o'-the-wisp. In other words, they disappear. It's just like that Matrix movie. You're just like in the middle of the Matrix. And we're trying to pull the plug. And give you, what is it, the blue pill or the red pill? The blue pill. Trying to give you the blue pill, and then you just see, wow, it's all illusory here. These people are just, not, of course, they're real people, but my perception is just illusory. The world exists, but the perception is illusory. But for that, you need to understand the real world. You can't just, like, understand this world is illusory without understanding the real world. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in some traditions, they actually have fancy ways of chanting for them. Like in the Buddhist tradition, they have these prayer wheels. You know how they, with it, and the prayers are written on the wheels, so every time you spin it, it's like doing all the prayers. So we should have prayer wheels in Krishna consciousness, you know, mantra wheels. So instead of chanting the slow process on these beads, we just spin something. 16 rounds, 64 rounds. I mean, you've actually done 16 rounds, right? And then we'll get even lazy. We'll have to put a motor on the prayer wheel. You know, just like push a button. You know, we're becoming so lazy and lethargic in Kali Yuga. Okay. So I think it's time. Any other questions or comments or problems or issues? Yeah.
You see a pastime or you experience some internal lila. Do you share with the guru?
You can share with the guru. Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that can be revealing the mind to more advanced devotees. Yeah, I think that's an important question you asked. Not just the guru, but more advanced devotees. But the intention should not be to brag. You know, look at me. And usually you don't do it to equally advanced devotees. You don't do it to less advanced devotees, because less advanced devotees mean trying to win followers like that. So a devotee doesn't brag or talk about his own level of realization. We don't find Prabhupada doing that. You know, Prabhupada commented one time, once or twice, there was never a time when I did not think of Krishna. But it's not that Prabhupada bragged that I'm on this level or that level. And when the devotees would ask Prabhupada, what is your rasa, like that, he said, that sort of question you don't need to ask. So Prabhupada really, like, didn't want to deal with that with the devotees. So, yes, with the guru, you could. That's another thing when one comes to the higher platform of devotional service and the stage of Raghunuga, that one should confirm with the guru, either Siksha Guru or Diksha Guru. Usually at that point it's the Siksha Guru. But the as to what one's services in the spiritual world, that's the acharyas like Bhaktivinoda talk about that the guru confirms what one's service. One thinks, well, my service is, you know, trade in the spiritual world, and the guru will say, yes, that is your service. You know, confirming that. So understanding what's one's spiritual identity is sort of a give and take with the guru. You understand, give and take, you know, you reel back and forth. But not that there was this system of siddha pranali where at the time of initiation the guru would give you your spiritual identity. Did you ever hear that before? That's good. Siddha pranali. Siddha pranali is bona fide, but it's not something that's recommended for this day and age. That when you took initiation, you'd say, you know, Dwarka, you are a cow. And your name is Moo. So you get your identity, your service, your dress, and everything like that.
So you start practicing.
So you practice it. You know, all day long. Moo. Moo. So, but that was the tradition. That's the Vaishnava tradition. However, later that became accepted as it became transformed into Sahajism. And people took it cheaply. But that it's a bona fide tradition, but it shouldn't be practiced. You understand? It's called Siddha Pranali. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about it, although Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur negated it, stopped the whole thing. And so it's not really for us to be practicing. However, we should understand that our goal is to come to that stage. It's not that you simply remain a Kanishtha Adhikari your whole life, or just, you know, not having any internal life. We have to understand where we're going to. It's like if you have a GPS, you have to plug in your destination. Right? Even though you're not there, you have to know what you're going to. And where we're going to is that internal absorption in Krishna's pastimes, and ultimately participation in Krishna's pastimes. Like you have that story of Srinivasacharya, that he would enter into Krishna's pastimes, you know, in meditation. He would come out sometimes with things that he encountered in that meditation. Yeah, so you come out with the scent, with the flower garlands. You imagine going in, and his disciple, Ramchandra Kaviraj, would go into the same meditation with him. It's a pretty good relationship with the guru, isn't it? The guru was, what happened is that Srinivasacharya was sitting there, and it was like 3 or 4 days, he didn't come out of his meditation. And his wife got really upset. You know, he hasn't eaten, he hasn't drunk anything. She called for his disciple, Ramchandra Kaviraj, who sat right next to him. And they entered into the same meditation. And they were looking for the ring of Srimati Radharani that had fallen in the river. And they were looking. Finally, they found it. And they both came out of meditation at the same time. That's pretty good, isn't it? So, that appears very far out. We shouldn't imitate it, but that's actually where we should be heading to, that point. Really, that's our goal, not being successful, big guru, big rich person in this material world. This is all will-o'-the-wisp. That's our goal, to actually be there with Krishna, in Krishna's pastimes.
But that's also, here's the proof, there's a clear world beyond.
Yeah, that proves to us, it helps increase our faith when we see that.
Some material people, they have observed this, they think this is real, what you can see, feel, and what you're imagining is like phantasmagoria. So there's a proof, there's a special world. And they don't get completely objective.
Yeah, there's many objective proofs that there's something beyond this body. For example, we were just giving a seminar about reincarnation, how it's been proven, you know, beyond all shadow of a doubt that people reincarnate from one lifetime to another. How is it proven? You have some people who regress people to previous lifetimes, and the people know about things in a village halfway around the world that even the people living there don't know about. You know, and they fly there from Australia. For example, there's a story from Australia. A lady flew with the therapist to the UK, and they found a house with windows, and she knew exactly where the window was. One of the windows was plastered up that nobody even in that village knew about. I mean, that's proof. Or even I was just reading that they have this thing right now that, you know, there's experiences where you have a loved one who dies, and you don't know they're dead, but they come and see you after they're dead. We had experience with that in our temple in the United States, that there was this girl who passed away in the middle of the night, and But some people saw her in Mangalarti that morning. You know, that I didn't see her because I was in front. I was leading the kirtan. So you don't see people in the back. But the devotee said, no, she was there in Mangalarti. But she had passed away at like 11 or 12 o'clock at night. But she was there in Mangalarti. Pretty interesting, isn't it? So, I mean, there are objective things that happen in this world. Yeah, the near-death experiences, the people appear after they die, the reincarnation regressions. I mean, there's so much objective proof. However, let's just approach his statement philosophically. He says, no one has seen the soul. No, he has not seen the soul. For him to make that statement, you know, absolute statements are quite dangerous. Because for him to make the statement that no one has seen the soul, it means he would have to know everybody. That means he's God. He knows everything, so he's God. So you should start worshiping him immediately. You know, if you make an absolute statement, no one has seen this, that means you know everybody. Everywhere, and all the planets, and all the universes. So that's the... philosophically, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's an idiot. No, he's in Maya. He's not in Rhythm. He won't listen. So, Upadesho Vimurkanam Prakopayana Shantaye. If you give a fool good instructions, he just gets angry. So I don't even bother with these things, you know. If he's so foolish to say that everybody or nobody has seen the soul, then let him be. Just give him some prasadam. So, yes.
One last question. If we're seeing somebody who's sick in hospital,
yeah,
and we, you know, we don't give them philosophy, what do we do? Like, do we empathize with them?
Well, philosophy, you mean talking about a devotee or a non-devotee or what?
Anybody.
Anybody. Yeah. I would just give them a little prasadam, little holy names, let them hear the holy names. We have, you know, some of my disciples are doctors or nurses, and what they do if someone's getting ready to die, right before they die, so the family members don't get upset, they whisper in there. One of my disciples works in the, neonatal unit, you know, where you have all these preemies who die. And so she whispers in their ears. And they'll never tell their parents that they heard Hare Krishna, because you've got to be careful about keeping your job. So sometimes, I mean, let's give you the example of my grandmother. My grandmother was not a devotee. She wasn't going to chant Hare Krishna. And I visited her in the old people's home. And so as soon as she turned her back, I snuck some Radhakund water in her coffee. You understand? Yeah, she turned her back, and I had this little eyedropper. And she turned around, drink your coffee, Grandma. So that you find a way. I mean, philosophy, yeah, if someone's ready to hear a little philosophy. But for devotees in particular, we should be talking about the pastimes when they're getting to leave their bodies. You know, we're talking about this one devotee, Ram Govinda, that he just passed away. And I encouraged the family to read pastimes, not just read the Bhagavad Gita to him when he was leaving his body. I mean, it's one thing, you know, you're not the body. The changing body is just like one changes dresses, but it's a lot more understandable for him to hear about Krishna's pastimes, something for him to meditate on. I can't meditate on not the body. I can meditate on Krishna's pastimes.
So, for example, a woman recently been laid out.
Yeah.
And, at a young age. And she's chanting, but she's, you know, still quite distraught, maybe a year on or so.
Yeah.
So, you know, do you say, you know, well, your husband's gone to a better place, he...
Well, yeah, you can assure her like that, you know, your husband, because you're chanting... That's the best Shraddha ceremony you can do for your husband. He's gone to a better place. I mean, yeah, you have to be empathic like that. But then you encourage someone to be absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. It's hearing, like Prabhupada's Krishna book, or Chaitanya Charitamrita, or Chaitanya Bhagavat. And you give them... Nowadays, I just find people don't read as much, so you give them, like, MP3s to listen to. while they're driving to work, while they're walking, while they're doing other things. And it changes their consciousness. I would just give them a present, you know, like a CD with MP3s on it. And that will actually affect their consciousness. All right? Well, it's getting late. We lost an hour. What?
No,
ask a question.
Because not every one of us, we have come from Goloka Vrindavan, and a lot of us have come from other Vaikuntha planets also.
Really? Okay.
Because wouldn't that make us naturally not attracted to Krishna?
I came from Yamaraj, so I don't know about you. I would say any deity form or any pastime of the Lord you're attracted to, just latch onto it. You know, whether it's Lord Rama's pastimes. And be emotionally, yeah, that's another point about visualization. You have to have emotional involvement too. You understand? Emotional involvement? Like especially when I hear about Sita and Ram's pastimes, there's a lot of emotional involvement because I get angry at Lord Ramchandra. So, isn't it? So why did you send Sita Devi away? I just get, you know, how could you do such a thing? You know, she was completely innocent, completely pure. You know, she never thought of anyone else but you. Who cares about that creep who criticized her? You know, wanted to get a life. You know, so emotions are there.
Like love and Kush.
Love and Kush, yeah.
They were very angry.
They were very angry, yeah. But that's a spiritual emotion. So you can even have anger in relationship to the Lord. As long, you're not blaspheming him. You're just thinking, why did you do that? You know, or Krishna, why did you leave Vrindavan? So there's some emotional involvement. You can't, that's a point, that's really an important point. That you really can't meditate on something unless there's emotional involvement. Because that's the heart. The brain doesn't give you emotional involvement. It's just like analysis. But the heart is emotional involvement. You know, either attraction or love or anger, any of these ghastliness, you know, the indirect rasas that are there. And so that enables you to further concentrate on the Lord's pastimes. So you have to find something that resonates. You know, pastimes that really resonate with your heart. Like, you know, like Lord Ram's pastimes or Lord Nrsingh. I know a lot of young devotees, they resonate with Nrsingadev's pastimes. Kill that demon. You know, I see a lot of our younger devotees walk around with Nrsingadev tattoos on them and everything, or shirts. Isn't that noisy? He has a Nrsingadev tattoo? Where? Really?
Yeah.
So he resonates with that. So whatever you resonate with, that's a fancy word, whatever particularly attracts you, then you get into that pastime. And you picture it. It's just so wonderful. Like Hanuman, right? The kids usually like that, you know, flying through the air, Hanuman, superhero. You know, for children, he's more attractive than Radha and Krishna having some romantic affair. You know, if you tell a little kid, like Nimai's age, about Radha and Krishna, they met in the forest. It's annoying. But if you tell about Hanuman flying through the air and, you know, setting Lanka on fire and making himself gigantic and going into the mouth of the serpent and bursting her belly open, then it's very exciting. So there's something for everybody in Krishna's pastimes. You should find those pastimes which particularly attract us. So I think we have to end because we've lost an hour. It's already 10. Oh, that's the right time. Oh, okay, that's good. I got scared. I thought I had gone on for 2 hours here. Okay, that's a relief. Okay. All right.